Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben Lawrence.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Chris Casso.
What up?
How is everybody this fine evening?
Well, we're at the punchy hour.
Yeah.
Yep, we're kind of at the punchy hour.
I'm staring at the wall of comics over here, and there's Space Boy, but they're arranged in such a way that it looks like it says Space Bob. I'm just imagining
Space Bob.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a Sid and Marty Groff show.
Kind of.
The Adventures of Space Bob.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a wonderful night here in the Pacific Northwest. And speaking of wonderful, two things that we all love, Lock and Key and The Sandman. Well, they're going to be hitching up. They're going to be joining forces.
Remember how last episode I was talking about how the mashup will be the way we live in the future?
Yeah.
We're living in the future now. But
we're living in the future.
Because it makes sense, because this story is from is sort of dipping into the season of the mists.
Right.
Where Lucifer abdicates the throne of hell and he hands the key to Morpheus.
Sure.
So, and then lock and key and keys. And
it's
stuff.
Like, I get it. It's actually probably the smoothest thing you could mash.
Yes.
But did we have to?
Do we have to?
Do
no,
we
of
really
course not.
Need to?
I guess that's the other thing. Is like,
and I also get it because it's like, okay, Black Label and they already got Joe Hill and Joe Hill's got Joe Hill at IDW. Okay, but do we have to?
Right, and we're not even we don't even question that anymore. So
yeah.
I don't remember, Ben. Is it going to be an ongoing or
mini? I just have an Instagram post from Joe Hill. He doesn't say.
Mm.
It's just a picture of him shrugging his shoulders, like, I guess we're doing this.
Cashing the checks.
Yeah. Exactly. Look at this new house it bought me.
Did you all know that he has a younger brother named Owen that also writes books and nobody cares, I think?
Maybe this is kind of like his mom. His mom has their mom has written books for years and nobody reads Tabby's books.
I did know that Stephen King has a child named Owen because he puts Owen in a lot of his stuff.
Okay.
But I did not realize Owen was also an author.
There's a lengthy essay about attending one of Owen's baseball games in something.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's like 40 something, so
sure.
Yeah.
But I still feel like somebody's like, wait a second. I thought he just had Joe. And then Owen's like, I'm here too.
Aww. Joe and anyway.
And they have
a daughter,
Naomi or something.
Naomi, yeah. A woman I knew in graduate school roomed with Naomi at Evergreen.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
I didn't realize Evergreen had dorms. I thought you just stayed in the apartment complexes down there in downtown
Olympia. I didn't say they were dormies.
Anyway.
Dormies.
The Umbrella Academy is a favorite of Cole's that I know. And Dark Horse has announced a prequel called You Look Like Death by Gerard Way, de Gabriel Ba, and Culbert. Oh, not Ba's not involved, but Simon Culbert and Pycos. And I will get those first names if anybody cares.
Okay.
But yeah, Umbrella Academy prequel. Did we need this?
Probably not.
They did that one Hazel and Cha-Cha special, holiday special, and like people were like, yay. But then people also didn't realize it was about to exist.
Right.
It feels like these things just kind of appear, and even though we know they're coming, most of the people who would care don't know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So it's just like, and this is as well.
And I thought Way said he was done with comics, and then this pops up. Hey, little bit of awesome tonic for the soul, related but maybe not. You know, it was a great way to get the sour taste of Gerard Way's Doom Patrol out of your gullet is to actually watch the DC series.
I've heard good things.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It calls back to old Silver Age stuff. It creates it's about people with disabilities and found families.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very well written. Everybody of the characters are really compelling. It's got it leans heavily on Grant Morrison stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Obviously, but the core group is not the Grant Morrison core group. It's because of Cyborg, and I'm still kind of puzzled by his presence, but I like him.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved it, and I'm afraid that as things go, the second season is not going to be quite as sparkly, but man, I do recommend the first season. I thought it was marvelous.
And it has Danny the Street in it, so that gets in points.
And that is the best episode.
I've heard.
It is so beautiful. Yeah.
It just makes me want to just reread Doom Patrol.
Yeah, precisely.
Like, anytime they make these TV shows, I'm like, I should reread that comic and not watch this TV show.
Yeah.
Well, can I watch Doom Patrol without subscribing to DC Plus, First Up, whatever it's called?
Did it get on physical media?
I got it from the library.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, they're all available at the Seattle Public Library. Got a long wait right now in the Swamp Thing, but...
Or locally, you can rent it at your Scarecrow Video.
I'm sorry, physical media.
They didn't pay me, but...
Physical media. Well, but...
I'm trying to keep them alive. They're like my main entertainment these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you keep believing that, pal.
Alrighty. In a blatant attempt to make new toys, DC has announced a new digital first comic set in the world of the beloved cartoon Batman, the animated series. The 6-issue miniseries Batman, The Adventures Continue will be written by former BTAS, and I'm going to pronounce that badass, badass producers Paul Dini and Alan Burnett, with art by Ty Templeton. And yeah, it's basically, they admit it, it's just so we can put more toys in the line.
Yep.
Yeah, they actually did just solicit animated style toys for characters that were never animated,
right,
which includes the Vampire Batman and the Batman Who Laughs. And it's just kind of like, oh, we're just going all in on that style there.
Yep. Okay. Well, but I mean, that goes in waves.
Sure.
It's, you know, every once in a while we come out with those. I can't, you know, I love that TV show. I collected all the Kenner toys in the original series. Mm-hmm. I can't justify nor afford these new ones they're doing. They're beautiful, but they're bigger.
They're like $28.
And they're a lot more expensive, and I don't have room anymore. And I was kind of hoping that they would just like quit. And quit hurting my heart, but that clearly that's not part of the agenda.
No. They have a big old whiteboard, and on the bottom right corner is like, mess with Core Holodeck.
Just like you're doing right now, Chris. Yes. Just like you're doing right now.
Core
you're hurting
Holiday.
Me.
Core Holiday is a great name. Your brain
no,
did
it's
a
not.
Thing.
No, it's really not. It's
that's
really...
your like Earth F counterpart.
I feel it's like your atomic robot version name.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's okay, friends. It's the punchy. Hour.
Anyway,
Ben wants to move on.
Batman The Adventures Continue will be released digitally in April when print on May 6, 2020.
It's Bern Lawrence.
It's going to keep going.
Len Borns is what I get off of.
What else you got there, Ben Lawrence?
Well, Sci-fi.com had an article about the 13 non-binary writers and comic creators changing science fiction and fantasy. And they had a number of creators that they listed in comics specifically. And creators such as Kate Leth, writer of Vampirella, Adventure Time, Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. Vita Ayala, who writes Xena Warrior Princess, The Wild, Supergirl, and a couple others. And I just want to know from you, friends, if there are any other non-binary creators that we should be aware of writing our comics or drawing our comics or in the industry at all.
Anywhere, ever,
anywhere. Let's elevate them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's some Instagram people I follow, one of which is Andy Pashier. I don't know if I'm saying their name right. They consider themselves trans non-binary, and they just do these really sweet little... Well, I said sweet, and then I picked a panel where they're in devouring someone whole like a snake. But they're very cute. They're very memoir-y type things. And then, of course, there's Maya Cobin. How do you say their name? That did Genderqueer. Oh. Red Gold Spark. Maya Kobabi.
Yeah.
I'm looking at their name. I'm still not going to pronounce it right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I think they actually do... EM air, which is always very difficult for me to try to wrap my brain mouth around.
This is an area I need to do more research on, because a number of the books I feel that I've read recently, I would take a wild guess that they may be genderqueer, but I also just didn't do that level of research. I just read the book and I'm like, I love you, and then moved on.
Well, and the thing about non-binary people is they don't necessarily change their name. Some people do, but some don't. And so they might be like Sarah or Ben or whatever. And they don't say, hi, I wrote this thing, and also I'm non-binary. Right. You know, you just read a comic, and you don't necessarily know people.
It's not immediately identified
as such. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a digital first one that looked really cool that I'm going to look into that was... where is it? Ben Kahn, Giffen, Galaxy's Most Wanted, Heavenly Blues, Once Upon a Time Machine. The Galaxy, Giffen, Galaxy's Most Wanted, Anarchy in the Milky Way, and it's by SBI Press. And it looks like it was a digital first, so we have emergencies happening outside.
Yeah, they're passing us.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there's some cool stuff on this list that had me want to check it out.
There's a book that came in recently from Icon Books that I need to put some time to the side and read called Gender, A Graphic Guide by Meg John Barker and Jules Schell. And they previously did a book called Queer, A Graphic History. And this one looks like it would be a very, very engaging way of learning more. Just from like the quick pull quotes in the back, like, is masculinity toxic? Why are public toilets such a political issue? How has feminism changed the available gender roles? And for whom? Why might we all benefit from challenging binary thinking about sex and gender? So this is just a good guidebook. So yeah.
Yeah, Ben pulled out the quick and easy guide to they, them pronouns by Archie Bongiovanni and Tristan Jimerson. And it's by Limerus Press, who we've talked about before. They do like a erotica line, but they've also just been doing these really great like kind of guides to things. It's only $10.49 and it's really informative. And also Archie did a comic called Grease Bats, which is a memoir that is really fun, just about being queer and dating and whatever. So that one is published by Boombox.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of more teen because, you know, drinking and dating and whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty fun too. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, friends, if you want to go and search out non-binary and genderqueer authors and creators, let's move on to book report, everybody. And, well, Nicole, why don't we start with you since you got a pile of books in front of you?
it's a weird one.
I was curious.
Yeah, one of my favorite people, Shuzo Oshimi, who has done things that I have reviewed before, including most recently Inside Mari, but also Flowers of Evil and Happiness. He does a weird take on things. A lot of times they're coming of age, and a lot of times they're taboo, and a lot of times they're dark. This one caught my eye because it looks like it's talking about the relationship between a son and a mother, but it just seemed vague enough. I mean, because even just the little pull thing here is mother loves him very much, and his days pass with placid regularity, school friends, even the attention of his attractive classmate, Fukishi, until one terrible summer day, all changes. I mean, it's true. Something happens at the end of this manga, but it's weird. I'm going to try to navigate through this. Okay, so the main character, they just call, like, Shay, I don't know how to say that. It's S-E-double-I. I've never had to pronounce that before, so I butchered it, and I apologize. But the main character is just this, like, mundane, normal kid who is going to middle school, and his mom always just has this look on her face of like, just a proud, happy mom, you know? And he comes home, and she's like, what do you want to eat? Do you want to have pork buns or red bean buns? And, you know, it just seems very kind of run of the mill. But the thing about this artist is he sits on panels of just faces. So you just get a lot of looks. It's very sparse, but impactful. And he does that a lot with the mother character, but it makes me think because of that, and because she'll be like, I want to just hold you. And he'll be like, no. And he'll push her away. And like, that's the only time he's really elevated to some different emotional plane. And it makes me think that she's maybe molested him or something, but I have no grounds for that except that there's just something really off. There's something off about her. She's usually called like an overprotective mom. Gosh, your mom's so overprotective. And he hangs out with his cousin all the time, who always ribs him on it. And she does something really messed up out of nowhere for unknown reasons. And that's what you're left with in the first volume. So I have no idea what to think about this title. Yeah. It's very strange. It's still got that unsettling, but in a direction I have no idea where it's going. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely going to pick up volume two just to be like, what are you doing?
This kid's life spiral into nightmare is the way it's described. Yeah, just a quick look at it and the way the facial expressions and the stuff in the scene in the end here, I'm like,
yeah, it's weird. Mm-hmm. It's weird. And I just can't put my finger on what it is. It's just speculative at this point. And it makes me feel gross. And usually his comics don't make me feel gross. They might push boundaries that make me feel uncomfortable, but I feel gross reading this one. So, of course, I have to read more.
Yes, keep going.
Blood on the Tracks. There you go. Volume one.
Cool. Thank you, Nicole.
There are no tracks in this comic, by the way.
All righty. Well, good to know. Glad I knew that before going in. Chris Cassell, what do you got for us?
So I did read three books, but the third book is just nothing to talk on about. So I'm going to give you guys a choice. You either get to hear me go on about The Expanse, about the Amazon show Undone, or about the first two episodes of Netflix's Dracula.
Damn, that's a toughie.
Yeah. My mom watched the Dracula one.
Yeah. I like them all. They're all great.
Okay.
One of them I'm not going to shut up about, and that's going to be The Expanse. You might just save that for an episode.
Let's go Dracula.
Go Dracula? Yeah. Okay. So this is by the Doctor Who showrunner. What's his name? The one that
Moffat.
The one that people tend to have a problem with.
Right.
I never understood that completely. But so it's an adaptation of the Stoker book. Stoker book. And so the familiar names are there. It's Mina and the guy Keanu
Van
Reeves.
Helsing.
Keanu Reeves.
I do not recall his
John Harker?
John Harker.
Yeah, Harker.
Yeah. It was right.
And it's basically
right on the tip of my
fan. Yes. And it's basically Harker's getting interviewed at a covenant by nuns. And one of the nuns is like super sassy. I love her so much. And he's recounting the visit to Castle Dracula. And what's interesting is that they do little tweaks on the mythology that you would expect, but some of them a little bit more interesting than others. And then they completely derail it by the end of each episode and go somewhere else. And you're like, what? It's like that character's out. And then you try to play the game of like, is this going to be a Renfield? Are you going to do that? And you're like, no, that's something else. So it's consistently like, whoa, didn't actually think you'd be doing that with this. And they do an interesting play on queerity too as well, because the thing is, like, at some point the nun's just like, did you have sexual relationships with the count? And they kind of like dance over this, and at some point the count's just like calls Harker his bride, and so the count's he's pretty bi, and he's pretty fluid. Yeah. And the thing I like about the actor who's the count, whose name I do not know, is that he's not handsome, but he's not ugly. But he is charming.
Charming goes a long way.
And charming goes a long way. Because, I mean, he's kind of handsome.
It does. But, charming will get me every time.
But he's not like what you would think as traditionally handsome for this role. And so they avoid doing like sexy vampire, but he's so charming, you're like, you sexy. And and so it's just like well balanced on the casting. And then they do some interesting stuff with Van Helsing as a name.
Oh.
And there's some really good turns on that, and I don't want to spoil that.
Okay.
And so this is only two episodes you've watched?
Yeah, well, so it's only three episodes. It's the BBC style.
Oh, so they're each like movie length.
Yeah, they're like an hour-ish plus. So
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But they do some interesting stuff with like the changing forms. Like, you know, he turns into a wolf, but like they make that really disturbing and ugly, and it's not easy. And there's a thing with flies all the time that's fascinating. And the idea of undeath is a little bit different. They do the whole sequence where he's on the boat ride to England, and that becomes this really amazing, like, murder mystery story. And so I'm really all in. And then number two ends in such a way that I don't even necessarily want to say it's clever, but it's like somebody sucker punched me and I'm like, what? We're doing this now? And so I don't know if episode three will necessarily deliver on that, but I got to give him credit for being like, this is a very different way of doing this. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect it. Plus I just like the guy who's Dracula a lot. I like the guy who's Jonathan Harkness, whatever. Yeah, everything's just a little bit unsettling, which is perfect. Mm. So I would recommend checking it out. It's just interesting to see somebody approach it and muck it up, mm-hmm. you know? Because mm-hmm. Everything's familiar enough, and you're just like, yeah, I see where you... Oh, never mind. So yeah, Dracula was good.
All righty. Cool. Thank you, Chris.
So far.
And episode 3 is just going to tank and it's going to
it's happened.
Retcon everything to be terrible in the first two episodes.
It will take place in space, you know?
It'll pull like a Highlander 2. Anyway, yeah. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I read this giant hardbound edition of Bowie, Stardust, Ray Guns, and Moon Age Daydreams by Michael Allred, Steve Horton, Laura Allred, with the foreword by Neil Gaiman. I was really looking forward to this book because I knew that Mike Allred was probably one of the bigger fans of David Bowie in comicdom, and David Bowie's whole over his entire artistic career had a profound impact on Mr. Allred. And if you followed Mike's work, close to 20 years ago, he did a whole multimedia series called Red Rocket 7, and it had that thematically crossed over into a short film that he made called Astro-esque, as well as the album The Gear. Was it good?
Yeah.
Red Rocket 7 was really interesting, but he put so much heart and soul into his work that I am reluctant to criticize anything he does except this. This is beautifully, beautifully drawn. The colors are exquisite, but I think this is the first time where I could actually step back from a biographical work of an artist that I worshipped as well and say, yeah, you were too close to this. You missed a lot. Mm-hmm. The story and the main issue I have is the text itself, which Mike Allred did not write on his own. He co-wrote it with Steve Horton. And one of the things that kind of set me off from the beginning was that in the credits and the opening of the book, they're credited like this is a screenplay, like you're reading a movie, directed by Mike Allred's Technicolor, cinematography by Laura Allred. That's just all well and cute and everything, but it doesn't work for me. The biggest issue I have with this is that there are a lot of pretty pictures, and it's highlights that he intentionally only takes up. And if you're familiar with David Bowie's work, he was all about his chameleon nature as an artist, and he was incredibly gifted at tapping into reinventing himself, and he did it all the time, and it got to the point where his fans and the general media were just eagerly waiting to see how he was going to evolve this time. And then about after the 80s, it kind of stopped. He was always had his finger on the throb of music and art that was happening around him. It's just that the output that he had was so uninspired, from Tin Machine to solo albums like Heathen. What was really tragic is that none of us knew that one of the best albums he ever did was going to be his last album, because it was that album was so incredibly inspired. And I was actually kind of saving it. I had not bought it yet, and then he died and I bought it. And I listened to it to death, and now I can't listen to it anymore. Back to the book. And there are anecdotes in here that are valuable. But one of them, for instance, where I feel like that Allred really, really falls down is there's a half a page devoted to Bowie's half-brother, Terry Burns, who was schizophrenic. And there's a moment where we see Terry have this psychotic break, and then it jumps to this kind of sidebar note that Terry spends the rest of his life in a sanitarium until he throws himself in front of a train in 1985. Never once is Terry talked about again in this book, but Terry's presence in David Bowie's life was
huge. He confided in many of his friends, family, and fellow artists that he was concerned about, you know, the arc of his own sanity, and that imprinted on how he did his art. I mean, he even has an album called Aladdin Sane. And there's just really obvious stuff like that. If you were a Bowie fan, you know these things, and that should have been in this book. The thing that really bothers me about this book is very little discussion is put toward where Bowie found his inspiration, how he created. I mean, this is just an E! Hollywood Story picture book. And that's fine if that's what you want. But I expected more, frankly. I didn't expect to have entire pages that are just lifted from publicity photos of concerts with just the date of the performance date and the location. That's just not, to me, a good use of time. Time and space. And I also got the impression that they didn't know how they wanted to end this book. You read the title and you think, oh, we're going to go through Ziggy Stardust, Aladdin Sane, and we're going to stop right before we get to the Thin White Duke. And, you know, they didn't do that. They kind of half-assed the ending. We get to Diamond Dogs, and then there are 3, 4, 5 lovely spreads that of just these collages of the rest of David Bowie's career. And in Allred's end notes, he's like, you know, and these are ideas that I'd like to explore in a later book or something. I'm like, well, that's great, but this tells me you didn't really plan this out very well, and you also rushed into this book. And for $40, you know, it's basically a really pretty David Bowie picture book, but it's not going to teach you anything about the artist that I think that we deserve to learn.
All right. Well, it bums me out that you didn't like it, but thanks for that honest telling.
Absolutely.
Right. All right. Thank you, Cole. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time, but before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions come to us from me. We're going to do something a little different this time.
Oh, no.
Every once in a while,
I fear change.
Every once in a while, I just Google, if I'm looking for ideas, comic book trivia. Mm-hmm. And there is a website, maybe you found it too. It's called usefultrivia.com, and they have a section on comic books.
What?
And so it's I'm just going to set the timer for 3 minutes, and we're going to see how many questions we can get through. All right, you ready? Here we go. All
right.
Number one, what superhero was born with the curse of Kordax?
Oh, no.
Ghost Rider. It's multiple choice. Ghost Rider, Captain Marvel, Aquaman, or Hawkman?
Kordax. I'll go with Hawkman.
Hawkman. Hawkman. Nope. I'm going to mute that. It gives me a buzz. I didn't realize it. All right. Ghost Rider. Okay, we got that one wrong, so we're going to move on.
Ghost Rider.
Number two. What supervillain was created when Emil Blonsky accidentally exposed himself to a concentrated burst of gamma rays?
The Abomination.
Abomination is correct.
Blonsky.
There's more text here, but I'm not going to read it. Number three. What Chester Gould character made his first appearance in the Detroit Free Press on October 4th, 1931.
Dick Tracy.
Number four. What superhero grew up on the planet Tamaran?
Starfire
is the correct answer. Number five. Edwin Jarvis serves as butler to what super team?
Avengers.
Avengers is correct. Number six. Which of these superheroines was inhabited by the soul of an ancient Egyptian princess after attempting suicide? Wonder Woman, Hot Girl, Huntress, or Black Canary?
Hot Girl.
Hot Girl is the current. Hot Girl. Number seven. Who was the first costumed superhero? The Phantom, Arrow, Crimson Avenger, or Superman?
Phantom.
The Phantom is the correct answer.
Lee
Number
Fox,
eight.
The Phantom.
This is a multiple choice. Who was Elvis Presley's favorite superhero? Silver Surfer, the Green Hornet, Captain Marvel Jr., or Batman?
Captain Marvel Jr.
is the correct answer. Number
nine. Dress likes him.
What year was the first modern comic book printed? 1933, 1917, 1938, or 1925?
1938.
38 is wrong.
Oh.
All right, we're moving on. Number 10, who is Luke Cage's best friend and longtime partner in crime fighting?
Danny.
Danny
Danny Rand.
Iron Fist. Number. Okay, we got to go to the second page now. All right.
Wow.
What super team includes a sentient like tree creature?
Guardians of the Galaxy
is correct. Number 12.
Oh, that is the sentient tree creature.
What superhero gained his powers after being exposed to the orb of Ra? Multiple choice. Metamorpho, Hawkman, Doctor Strange, or Iron Fist. What was that?
What? No? Orb of Ra?
Orb of Ra.
You got to start over because I didn't hear the last two.
I thought it was Dr.
Metamorpho, Hawkman, Doctor Strange, or Iron Fist.
Metamorpho.
Metamorpho is the correct answer. Number 13. T'Challa, the King of Wakanda, is also known as what superhero?
Black Panther.
Correct.
That was so fabulous.
Number 14. What building served as the original headquarters for the Fantastic Four?
Baxter Building.
Stop.
Who's calling you?
Stop. It's not doing anything.
Tell him not to call you.
All right. Baxter Building is the correct answer. We made it through 14 in 3 minutes. Thank you, friends. That is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.